All right, are you ready?
Okay, so tonight I'm giving a shiur about fantasy sports, NCAA brackets, and whether you can go and enter a pool, whether you can have money in your fantasy leagues. And I've been doing fantasy sports. I did 4 years in high school. I'm starting our seventh year with our fantasy baseball. We just started fantasy football for the first time this year, where I'm the commissioner. And I like fantasy sports a lot. I've done brackets for years and years and years, and I've never won. Actually, I almost won. My friend who's in law school, if you want to know information, we can discuss after. A friend of mine in school, he has this huge pool. He's trying to get $10,000 this year in his pool. And a few years back, it was the 2007 year, I was in the way these things work, if you've ever done them, if you get the final four bracket, you have to basically guess all the way. You have to get all four teams' final four and get the championship game right, or else you're going to lose because they're just weighted points. Except last year, because like most people had Kansas going into the final four and they got knocked out in the second round. So either way, that year I guessed it all. I had UCLA against Florida, Ohio State against against Georgetown, and I had Georgetown over UCLA, and it was Florida over Ohio State, if anyone remembers. That was the year of Joakim Noah. Okay, so either way, I happen to like this a lot, and at some point when you do these, a lot of times you have to wonder, can you do money, can you do gambling, what's allowed, what's not allowed, and I had the fortune this past year to spend a little bit of time to go through the major issues that come up, so I'm just going to stress, I'm not going to give any lemaisa, I'm not going to paskin for you guys, that's not my role. You obviously have to talk to people, talk to your local Orthodox rabbi, talk to anyone who you trust, who can, you know, really lay out all the issues. But if you have any questions, here you have the background, at least you can sound intelligent, and we'll get to that. So it all starts in this Mishnah in Sanhedrin, which talks about this concept called Misachi Bukubia. If that term sounds unfamiliar, it means dice, playing dice. Misachik is a game, kubia means dice, and it says that anyone who engages in this activity called misachik b'kubia, you're pasul eidos. And that is the seminal rule. That's the Mishnah where this all begins. And the Gemara records different opinions as to why being misachik b'kubia, why dice playing makes you pasul eidos. So there are two opinions, and these two opinions reflect the two elements that you need to work out whether to determine if gambling is allowed or not. The first thing is Rami Bar Chama. Rami Bar Chama, he thinks that it's usher because it's something called asmachta. Asmachta is a conditional promise. I'm in law school, so I'm going to make it sound fancy. It's a conditional offer to pay a certain amount of money, but the person who would have to pay that money wouldn't agree. For example, you make a bet that you think that you're gonna get it right. But when you make that kind of bet and you agree to pay the person back, if you think that you're not gonna lose, if you think you're 100% right, you're not actually giving up that money to somebody else. So in essence, when you have to pay that guy back, he's stealing from you because he's taking the money unrightfully. Even though you promised even though you made that promise to pay him, that you never did it wholeheartedly. And since we assume you didn't do it wholeheartedly, the person who takes it from you is receiving it unlawfully, and it's going to be considered a gzela, and it'll be aser. And Ryan Bar Chama thinks this is true, because in Misachi B'Kubia, you don't think you're going to lose, right? You think you're going to win. And most people don't think that the worst person in their fantasy league is going to win the league, right? I don't know if you guys watch the show The League, but like even Andre won in season one, right? And Taco, they said, won a few seasons earlier. So like anyone could theoretically win. You don't think the loser's going to lose, but like a loser's going to win, but you have to be concerned for that. But since most people don't ever think that a loser like Andre would win his league, it's not going to be allowed. So Rav Sheshes, however, argues on this. He says when you do Misachi B'Kubia, it's not usur because you're stealing from the person because of this asmachta conditional promise issue. Rather, the reason why it's usur is because people who gamble, they're doing something which is called eino osik b'yeshuvah sho'olam. They're doing something which is, it's more against a regular type of profession. It's something which is it's uncomfortable. It's something that's not a proper way a person should act. And if a person engages in this kind of behavior, Chazal determined that you are pasul le'edus. And the assumption, at least, is being Masachi Bakubya is an activity which is inherently against, it's inherently not a normal, not a esteemed profession. And be that as it may, it would be possible to aid us to engage in that activity. Just as a side point, there's two issues to work out. One, if the standard is Einu Osik Bishubasho Olam, and that's what makes a person possible aid us by gambling, so my friend actually suggested this, Rabbi Morty Turoff. He's a friend of Jesse Miami. Katz's brother. What?
Miami Beach.
Miami Beach, exactly. So he was giving a shiur a while back. He's in the Chicago Colo, and he was talking about this. And he wanted to suggest the following, and I think it's really cool. Remember, this is not Psak Halacha. But to say that gambling is considered unesteemed, it's inherently disrespected profession would seem incongruous with what goes on nowadays, because being in the World Series of Poker, these professional gamblers, they're on television, they're on ESPN, they have advertisements. These are people that actually have professions, which is done. So that standard of Eino Osik B'Shuvasho Olam is not necessarily applicable nowadays, because people gamble. It's not just because it's they have nothing better to do with their lives. These are people who actually made a sport out of it. So if that's what to debate, if that's the standard. The assumption is that, at least for intensive halachic purposes, that this kind of activity would be a problem, and being a full-time gambler might make you pasul eidus, but it takes someone with shoulders much stronger than mine to be able to say that gambling is not this kind of activity of Eino Osik B'Shuvasho Olam. Either way, just something to think about. And also, now once Rav Sheshis is telling you that it's not usher, the reason why it's usher is because it's Eino Osik B'Shuvasho Olam, and you're not doing something which is a normal activity, the question is, why doesn't he think it's Zela? Right? Because Rami Bar Chama, the first opinion, he said it was usher because of Asmachta, because of Zela. And for him to say that it's not Zela, and it's rather a different reason, he has to explain why it's not Zela. And this is where it all begins. Explaining why Misachi B'Kubya, why dice playing, why gambling is not considered Zela, that's where you have to answer everything. So there are three opinions in the Rishonim, really two camps. Rashi, in Sanhedrin, where the Gemara is in Chaf Dalet, says it's usher because a person normally asmachta is when someone's conditional promise is done, because you think your ability will assist you in determining whether something is usher. If you think, because you have a certain skill, you have a certain knowledge, you rely on your own ability, that's going to make it asmachta, because you're not going to believe that you're going to have to pay the other person back. If you trust your instincts and you think your decisions are right, when you gamble and pick a side, you're doing it because you have a reason to believe that's right. You're not actually going to give and relinquish the money to somebody else. So if that's true, then it would be usher. But Misachi B'Kubya, what's going on? It's craps. You just throw the dice. I have no control what's going to be. Yeah, I could play the odds, whatever it is. The point is that the ultimate result of what would happen by winning because of dice is all arbitrary, and I have no full control of what's going on. Ree, however, has a little bit of a nuance in Rashi's approach. Rashi said if it's based on your ability, the Ree just says that it has to be completely out of your control. That if you have any control, even if it's a partial amount of control, then it would be usher. Misachi B'Kubya, he believes, is completely out of your control, because the ultimate result of what the dice will show up is arbitrary. That's one camp. That asmachta is a function of skill, it's a function of ability, it's a function of trusting your own instincts.
Doesn't that make it better, though?
What do you mean better?
If you're not just relying on luck and you're relying on skill, then it should be permitted.
Well, the assumption is that when you rely on your own ability, on you trust your instincts. So when you put up the money, you have no intention of actually giving it to the other person. You think that you're putting up your money just as a pretense to get the money back. More money. So the issue, right, being Zela, is because the other guy is taking your money unlawfully. That's what the difference is. Everyone got that?
Yeah.
Cool. Perfect. So Rabbi Tam's be really nice if this worked out. Rabbi Tam says it's not asmachta when someone's going to be gaining money. He says that when the act is done to gain money, then it's not considered asmachta. And he would assume that Misachi B'Kubya is done. It's not an issue because you're doing it to gain money. You're doing it to make money out of it. The exact quote, if Yaakov's eyes are looking a little strange. So it would be, asmachta applies in other contexts. Asmachta is a rule in Shas which applies to getting owed money back by an arev, other cases in Shas. But specifically this idea of being marviach, meaning to recoup money, that'd be asmachta. But if it's to make money that you never had before, that's not asmachta. Fine. Either way, the point is that the Gemara doesn't really resolve who we follow. This will be up to the Rishonim and the Achronim. But at the end of the day, we have two issues that we have to work out to figure out whether gambling is mutter or not. One, is it stealing? Is it asmachta? Is it gzela? And two, is this an activity which is considered eino osek b'yeshuvo sho'olam? Everyone, those are the issues. 2 points. If to say that, if once you can resolve those two issues, then gambling can be okay. All right. So the Rishonim, the Rif, who's a general, his psak in the back of the Gemara is the Rif is generally a strong superpower for a Rishon, and he sides with Rav Sheshes, who says that it's aser because of eino osek b'shuvo sho olam. That's why you're pasul eidos. And the Rambam reflects this as well in Hilchos Eidos, in Perek Yud Halacha Dalet. I know that that exact quote seems irrelevant, but it is relevant. Because the Rambam in a different place actually agrees with the other opinions. The Rambam in Hilchos Eidos says that you're only pasul if you're a full-time gambler. If you're a part-time gambler, you're going to be, and you engage in another profession, but you do it just for fun, you do it on the side, it's okay. Which is a good point, because then if you only do it on the side, it's not your full-time profession, it won't be eino osik b'shuvo sho'olam, because you're doing it, what? So they don't believe that mesachik b'kubya is considered asmachta. We're all going with mesachik b'kubya. The question is, how can we relate mesachik b'kubya to real life nowadays, fantasy sports, pools?
Because when someone understands the risks when they bet money?
Well, they
on both sides, therefore it's not.
So the Rama doesn't really express that. That'll come down to the Shulchan Aruch and the Rama. We'll get to that. The Rama, as far as I've seen, I don't know his opinion. Maybe he says it somewhere else. But at least I know he passes like Rav Sheshes. I don't know what he says about the skill based things. I'm sorry.
What about like the stocks and like stuff like that?
Oh yeah, we'll get to that. We are going to get to that. Yeah, thank you. If it isn't, he's going to kill me. The Rambam, however, seems to say somewhere else that Mesachah B'Kubya is considered Gzela. So that's a little tricky. If he thinks Mesachah B'Kubya is Gzela, in another place he says that it's considered okay. I mean, that was the question that you were kind of asking, right? You asked within the Rambam, how could it be that if he says that you're not puzzled if you do it only part-time, what about the gzela issue? So the Rambam in another place, in Hilchos Gzela, paskins that it's actually asur because of gzela. The Magid Mishnah over there asks the question. He gives this very difficult answer, which I probably don't understand. Either way, there are those who point out that steer in the Rambam, and it's not really clear. In the end of the day, the Rith paskins like, you know, Shubh Sholom, the other Shitos that say otherwise. And now I think it's a good time to point out the following. What time is it? Okay. So Rav Hirsch, I don't know if anyone knows Rav David Hirsch in YU.
He's
Peoria, Illinois, exactly. He's a YU Rosh Yeshiva. I've been in Lavi Kolel for 2 summers. Do I have time to tell that story?
Do you have any hookups there? Do you have any drunk?
In Lavi?
Yeah.
I used to know the camp director, Dave Fishberger. Rav Hirsch and I have had a very interesting relationship. Rav Hirsch, I'm ringing him up because he happens to feel very strongly about gambling, and I listened to his shiur again before when preparing this, just to get my opinion correct. Rav Hirsch happens to think gambling is the worst thing in the world, and he thinks it's completely usser. In his shiur, which is on Y in Torah, I think he might admit to murder. Maybe murder might be worse in his mind.
For which reason?
So we'll get to that. We'll get to that reason. But Rav Hirsch happens to feel very strongly about it. He recalls a situation when he was a kid, and he made a bet with some non-Jewish kid in his block, and he lost the bet, and the guy came over to go collect the money. This is when he was like a little kid. And his father heard about what happened and like totally like chewed him out and really chided him for what he did. So I think that stuck with him a lot, and he happens to feel very strongly against gambling. And soon enough, I'm gonna explain.
I wonder how he won when he felt the same way.
Yeah. You have to wonder that sometimes, how Sakalefa works, if it's really objective. Maybe because I like sports so much, I'm going to, you know, whatever. But either way, Hirsch and I had an interesting relationship. I'll say one story, and this is a classic. He's a Rai Rosh Yeshiva. He's a very, you know, important guy. So when we were in Lavi, we had this thing called Kollel Wars. I was in the Kollel learning that summer. And at some point, I think, you know, they decided to break up the Kollel into teams, and every day or every other day they'd have one sporting activity. Sometimes they played baseball, sometimes it'd be football, sometimes it was dodgeball, and we played kickball, and Hirsch hated kickball. That was the stupidest thing. So we were playing softball, and Hirsch was on my team for that game. He used to switch off into different teams. And you know the story, right? He was playing on my team, and he was you know, gonna pick a position. So I was playing center field, and he was gonna play left. And okay, we're out to the outfield, and Rip Hirsch is playing right on the line. You know, like right at the very end, like right by the end of the field. I'm playing normal center field, like in the middle. And I told him, like, Rebbe, you know, maybe you want to move a little bit more in, cover a little more ground in left field, and, you know, that way, you know, you'll be able to play better defense. So he's like, Jake, I like playing the line. Like, okay. Yada, yada, yada. After, you know, there was a long, long line drive, maybe 2 feet for Hirsch where he was standing. It went all the way to the fence, and I was bombing all the way from center field, and I threw as hard as I could to the cutoff man, and the guy got a double, and I'm like livid because I told him not to play where he was, and he says, Jake, you gotta get those. And for some retarded reason, I just said, no, you gotta get those. I told you not to play at the line. If you did where you weren't supposed to, you would have had that one. And the entire like field was in complete silence because I just spazzed at Rosh Yeshiva. And afterwards, we retired the side, and I went over to Hirsch because I felt really bad about what I did. I said, Rebbe, I'm really sorry. I shouldn't have gotten so angry in the field. Like, I just I let my emotions take the better of me. I'm really sorry. It's like, no, Jake, it was Otzlus. It was Otzlus. So that's our relationship. Either way, laziness. He was being lazy. So he, it's a good one, right? If you know me, it makes sense, right? I have other stories about me and other YU faculty for a different time. Either way, Rip Hirsch, he likes sports, but he feels very strongly about gambling. So the reason why is because he focuses on a different Gemara, which is in Shabbos. I'm not going to go through the details. But either the Gemara says that there's certain things you're allowed to do. You can give out and make lotteries for food on Shabbos. Let's say you're going to have friends over for Shabbos. You're allowed to distribute out all the pieces. So if you distribute out the pieces unfairly, like you take, you know, people, however the lottery works, if you're going to make a lottery so that some people get more and some people get less, that's going to be usser. And the Gemara says that's usser even during the week. And the reason the Gemara says it's usher even during the week is because it's called kubia. It's gzer mishum kubia. It's like stealing. It's masachik b'kubia. It's the same idea. So those rishonim, that say that asmach is considered that masachik b'kubia is usher can rely on that Gemara in Shabbos. And there's also a particular Rishon, which is quoted Rav Yosef Tuvelim, he was actually quoted relying on that particular opinion. Either way, the reason why the Gemara seems to say it's usher, this idea of making a lottery on Shabbos for different pieces is usher because of kuvya. And interestingly, the Tosfos on that Gemara says that this Gemara is not lahalacha, because Tosfos says we paskin that the Masachah B'Kubya is usher because of this Eino Osek B'Shuvah Sho'olam, that you're not doing a proper profession. And he says if that's true, then you can never say this lottery is usher, because it's not like a gambling profession. It's just a lottery for the different sizes of chicken that you're going to give out at your meal. So Tosa says the whole Gemara is thrown out. It's a nice Gemara in theory. It's not in practice, and move on. Sounds good to me, right? We paskin that the whole issue is that it's Einos and Mishuvah. Who cares? But the Chidush HaRan, and this is where Hirsch gets really excited. Chidush HaRan says that even though It might not make a psul edus for doing this kind of activity. It's still usser for a general isser of gzela that you're stealing. And he quotes through Shulchan Aruch in Hilchos Shabbos in Shinchav Beis Vav, which quotes this Gemara. He quotes both opinions by this idea of lotteries on Shabbos. He quotes two opinions, and the Ramah there doesn't say anything. Comes Rav Hirsch and says, you know what? Here I can prove that Gzela is Aser, because here's the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch is quoting this din of making a lottery on Shabbos, and there he paskins that it's Aser, even Bechol, even during the week, all the time, because of Kovya. That's where his conclusion gets to. But let me hold off on why I don't like it. The classic machlokas is between the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam. Shulchan Aruch and Shin in Choshen Mishpat, not in Orachayim in Hilchos Shabbos. The Shulchan Aruch quotes that it's usher because of Gzeil Durabana. It says that doing Misachah B'Kuvya, making dice throwing, gambling on dice play is usher because of Gzeil Durabana. The Ramah, however, in Shin Ayin Sif Gimel, says that the reason why it's usher is because, Misachah B'Kuvya is only a problem when you do it as a full-time profession. But if you don't do it as a full-time profession, it's mutter, he says, even if you do it with a non-Jew. Even if you do it with a Jew, not just with a non-Jew. I'm sorry. And he says to reference a different particular halakha. But either way, it seems to be a pretty easy machlokas between the Ashkenazim and the Sephardim how we view gambling. Because the Sephardim seem to say, Shulchan Aruch, seem to say that it's aser gzela midrabanan, period. So it's a per se violation of gzela. While the Ashkenazim would say it's okay as long as you're not doing it full time. Interestingly, getting back to your issue about stocks, there's machlokas Rav Avadya and Moshe Sternbach about lottery tickets. Rav Avadya thinks that buying lottery tickets is aser. He says that it's straight up gambling, and he doesn't allow it anyway. Moshe Sternbach, however, says they're mutter. He says lottery tickets are allowed because what's going on with a lottery ticket? When you buy the lottery ticket, you made a transaction at that point in time. When you buy the lottery ticket, once I give the money and I get my numbers, I just bought it. Now, what's going to happen with that lottery ticket? I have no idea. He says it's like buying a stock, right? What happens with the stock? You put money, you buy in a company, you invest in a certain percentage of that company. That company could go bust, that company could go high. But what you're doing is you're buying something of value. You're buying that lottery ticket. And Moshe Sternbach says by buying that lottery ticket, that's what you did with your money. You didn't gamble it. You didn't go out there and use it to go as a way to make it. You did it to buy that ticket. Yeah, sure, it can go up in value. Yeah, the stock can go up in value. But he says it's not considered gambling in any way, shape, or form. There's no enos v'shuvash olam. It's not anything at all. It's a purchase. You purchase that one lottery ticket and you're done. So, either way, we can see in two places that the Sephardim seem to be a little more makbid about these kind of gambling interactions, or using money to make money kind of thing, and the Sephardim seem to be, the Ashkenazim, seem to be a little more lenient about this subject. But
wouldn't stock be even less of a problem just because you're buying into a company?
Yeah. Well, yeah, so I think that's what I was saying. You're buying into this. Yeah, exactly. I think the way I'm looking at it is that. Yeah, I think Ravida would agree to that as well. Ravida would agree to that also. Saying, do lottery tickets seem more like stocks or more like betting on horses? Right? That's really the question here.
Betting on horses
is probably right. Yeah, it's probably okay. it's probably more in the. But we'll get there. Either way, the Ramah that I just mentioned references a different place in the Ramah. And this is where everything gets exciting. The Ramah, lay it back up. So Rav Hirsch, when he quotes that Ramah that I just told you about, he quotes that Shulchan Aruch, I just told you about, in Hilchos Shabbos, Rav Hirsch likes to make this Ha'ara. Rav Hirsch says that the Ramah didn't say anything in Hilchos Shabbos. Meaning, the Ramah I just told you about, the Ramah in Hilchos Choshen Mishpat, in Shin Ayin Sif Gimel, the Ramah says that gambling is only usher if you do it full-time. But if you do it part-time, it should be okay. So, The Rav Hirsch wants to point out, wait a second, the Ramah doesn't say anything in Hilchos Shabbos. The Ramah seems to be pretty lenient about gambling, but he doesn't say anything in Hilchos Shabbos. He wants to prove that even the Ramah, the Ashkenazi, the makel of gambling, seems to say that it seems to be noticeably quiet in Hilchos Shabbos, and he uses that as a proof, so to speak, that that Rav Hirsch's stringent and anti-gambling shita has validity. So not to criticize him, not to criticize anything. I think that you have to, when you listen to that kind of lundis, there's two points to make. One, a lot of it he relies on from this Chidushei Haran in Sanhedrin, and the Chidushei Haran is not necessarily no one really paskins like that straight up. Number two. A caveat to that is that the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah discuss this pretty clearly, and that's where the real normative psak would come from that machlokas. And similarly, for him to make a proof from the fact that the Ramah doesn't say anything in Hilchos Shabbos, well, you know what? You know why the Ramah probably didn't say anything in Hilchos Shabbos? Because it's Hilchos Shabbos. In a Hanami, the issue there reflects a din b'chol, but still, the Ramah could just rely on his opinion in Hilchos Choshen Mishma because that's where he's supposed to talk about gambling. He's not supposed to talk about gambling and Hilchos Shabbos and turn it into a totally different issue. No, he saves himself for Choshen Mishpat. I'm not saying I'm not right. I'm not saying he's wrong. I'm just saying that there's no proof to be made from the fact that the Ramah was silent Hilchos Shabbos, because I don't know if any of you guys have studied or taken the LSATs, but the absence of evidence is not necessarily evidence. Just because someone doesn't say anything doesn't mean that it's true. So, either way, the Ramah himself... Him himself speaks, and he gives two limitations to when gambling can be allowed. Because remember, I said that there are two issues about gambling. It's the asmachta element, the gzela, and the eino osik b'shuva sh'olam, doing something of an esteemed profession. So we know what the Ramah says about that eino osik b'shuva sh'olam. The Ramah says that as long as you don't do it full time, it could be okay. But how is the Ramah going to get out of this asmachta issue? We know what the Rishonim say. So who does the Ramah follow? Does he follow Rabbeinu Tam, who would save us a lot of a headache? Who allows anything as long as if it's liharviach, he says it's not asmachta. If you're gonna make a profit, he says it's not asmachta. But no, the Ramah does not pass him like Rav Yehotam. The Ramah passes like Rashi and the Ri, who says that something can circumvent asmachta when it's done when you don't have a skill involved. But once you start using your skills, once you start having your ability, once you start making your choice to gamble based on your own knowledge or something else, it's biyado.
So it was like blackjack, something
where there's a lot of skill, there's a lot of trusting your instincts, was a word I used before. When that takes place, that's when the Ramah says that'll be a problem.
But isn't that part of the game?
I understand it's part of the game. Yeah, exactly. So it doesn't mean that just because that's the game, you're allowed to play that game. But we'll get there. One second. We'll get there.
So brackets two, then.
What?
That takes some skill to know about each team.
We're getting there. You guys are stealing my thunder. I'm kidding. Either way, the Ramah points out that limitation. But the Ramah quotes a Yesh Omer, another opinion, which says that if the Mos are Badaf, if the money is on the table, and the money is being, and everyone involved in the game puts their money on the table, put their chips on the table, then it could be okay. So, Ramah has two issues.
Why does that make a difference?
Because then, once you put your money on the table, everyone's already been makne, everyone's already given up and already given it to the pot, put it in escrow, so to speak, and everyone has already released rights to the money. And once everyone's released rights to the money, it's like they already lost it, so they aren't expecting to loot, they're not expecting to get it back. They are actually willingly giving over the money. The only thing is, yeah, what's up? Oh, that's interesting.
Isn't that the same thing? It's just like actual money.
Yeah, so the only reason why, I understand why you say that, because you feel once you give the money, it's like already in the pot. But the issue is that the reason Achronim explain what when you put the money on the table, it's allowed because it's kind of like a kinyan chatzer. It's kind of like you put it in another person's possession and they're kone it from the fact that it's in that particular place. It's very complicated to figure out how the kinyan takes place. I don't really know enough to answer that question, but I think the way it appears to me is that once the money's on the table, then it's considered a relinquishment of rights.
chips could be like a different currency.
Yeah, it could be exactly. Yeah. It's fair to suggest that chips are like a different kind of currency. Yeah. So either way, the Ramah mentions two ideas. The question is, and this is a question that I don't have an answer to, but it's what to think about. Is the Ramah, are these two limitations, are they mutually exclusive, or are they connected? Meaning, do you need it to be both not skill and money on the table, or can it be either one? So that's unclear. I've heard people suggest that you need both, and I also, just when you see, and I've read places that seem to imply that they're different, that just putting the money on the table is enough. I'm not going to tell you what I think or what the Psak Halacha is, but
skill isn't a definite thing.
Yes.
You can't really say that skill is considered like cheating or it's not something definite. It's using your own abilities.
You're right. Well, the reason why using your own ability is problematic is because once you're using your own ability, we're afraid that you're not going to actually give up rights to the money. Meaning the issue of Zela is that when you do this Asmachta transaction, when you bet on something and you think you're going to win, you don't actually give up the money which you're betting.
But everybody expects to win. You can't say you have to
bet. That's the point.
No, but I mean, that still shouldn't make the whole thing possible.
Exactly. The more the skill is bad because skill is that you don't actually think you're going to lose. Meaning if it's something which is more arbitrary in nature, then that skill issue becomes irrelevant. And at the end of the day, the only issue then is it considered a part-time thing or a full-time
machines
thing?
Machines.
Okay, so let's start talking about examples. But before I get to examples, we're aware that it's possible that if you put money on the table, everything's over. All bets are off. And once you put money on the table, everything's done. Because if by putting the money on the table, it's like you already were machne. It's like you already gave it away. You've relinquished your rights. At that point, it won't lead to these asmachta stealing issues. That's debatable. I don't know if that's true. But it's fair to suggest that it makes a lot of sense that if you put the money on the table and everyone's got their money all in and you've already given it all away, then it's not like you're stealing from the other person because the guy already gave up the money. What's up?
So wait, when you said stealing, so it would be the person who, like the casino would be the person who's stealing it, right?
So the casino might be different. So let's go to examples. Casinos. So first of all, it's mutter to gamble with goyim, right? It's only zelomiter abanan at most, and it's usually mutter with a guy, so...
How do you know who's Jewish or blue?
What? Well, maybe he thought... It's still like... It's also... I'll get to that. I mean, gambling is not necessarily the greatest thing in the world, but either way, yeah?
You go to casinos, do you ask everyone at the table if they're Jewish?
Well, first of all, you're betting against the house. I mean, you're right. It's complicated. When we go to casinos, it might be an issue.
The question is, why are you in
there? I mean, it's not like... Either way, casinos, against the house, it might be different. I mean, it's very complicated. It's fair to suggest that once you put the money on the table, once it's all in the pot, right? Assuming like that one idea, once the money's all in the pot, once it's in the middle, it's like it's already been its own... It's already been relinquished their rights. And at that point, you're really just betting against the house, which is probably considered non-Jewish anyways. Unclear. So casinos are a different story. I think slot machines are totally fine because slot machines are completely skillless. Horse betting. So horse betting is probably, unless you really know a lot about horses, unless like you think you're infusing your reason to make a bet because you think a certain horse is the best, like she's the fastest, like, okay. But like most of the time, you pick it because of names, you pick it because of how it looks. You really don't know.
Actually, I know a lot about horseback.
I've never really done that. So following the line might be an issue also. I mean, like, I think there's a difference between what's considered biyado or what's considered not, what's considered skill-based. I think, like, when you bet on the line for a sports game, that might be a little different because if you know more about sports, you have a reason to think that, like, the line is better. Like, most people who bet, and, like, everyone made so much money on the AFC divisional game, right, this past year. I mean, so much money because people were just betting the line, and the people who bet against, whoever who didn't bet the line made a ton of money, right? I'm talking about the Patriots-Jets games. Anyway... So I think betting the line might also be a function of how much you know. Brackets. So brackets, people think they know a lot about it. People think that, like, they evaluate, you know, strength of schedule, they tournament champions, which at-large seeds make it more, they're playing in this team, and they sized up this well in a previous game, who's injured. listen, I try to pretend like I know a lot about college basketball. I don't. But still,
there's always upsets too.
What? There's always upsets. I think it's err on the side of caution. Most likely it's probably skill based because, I mean, listen, if it's completely arbitrary, you're not going to pick a 14 seed over a 3 seed unless you have a really good reason to think they're going to win, right? But then again, it's possible that if you give all your money first, then your money's on the table. It might change a lot of things too. If you pay for the brackets, like the brackets cost $5 a piece, you give the money in, it might change everything. Fantasy sports, I think, are probably the hardest to really get around, unless with the money on the table issue. Because at the end of the day, you pick fantasy teams based on a lot of... You pick because there's certain picks you want. There's your sleeper picks. There's your top picks. There's a lot of skill. So that's the thing. And this is what it comes down to. And I have to stress this. Because, you're right, this isn't gambling... This isn't gambling like you're doing it to make money, like you're going to a casino and you're doing it to make money as a profession. It's motivation. Exactly, it's motivation. And I agree. And it's hard for me to say that this is real gambling in the sense that it's an evil and despicable act. The Rishonim talk about gambling in harsh words, that it caused calamities in certain communities. I think when the Rishonim we're talking about are gambling in the sense of like people really like going to the casinos to use it as their profession. People like you and me who do fantasy sports, we're doing it because we want our friends to not give up after the end of the season, right? Like once your team's in the cellar, they give up. The best thing about fantasy football is that until week 10, everyone at least tries. Because you could get into the consolation playoffs, and like there's a chance you could do something. Like in fantasy baseball, after like in August, you're out. You know if you're gonna lose. By August, I mean early August, even late July, you're out. I mean, unless you're in the mid 5-6, you're not looking good, especially if your pitchers are on the decline. And everyone knows those players who play better in the first half than the second half. And if you have those on your team, like, I had Teixeira, and I was hoping last season he would come around, and he didn't. And, I mean, I've had Cabrera, who, like, is the best first, he's front-loaded. He'll get you 20 home runs, 25 home runs by the break, and you know he's going to cool off in August. Like, it just happens.
Yeah, you got to trade him.
Yeah, that's the thing. You have to trade rate people. It's very important to do that. Yeah, we can talk about fantasy. We can talk about that. I never won a fantasy. What? Oh, really? He never joins my league.
Bro, fantasy stocks.
Fantasy stocks. For him, it's not just fantasy. anyway, but I'll just point out. I don't know everything there is, but There's one marmukum I think is important to point out, that even though all these issues about Enos, Bishusha, Ola, I'm not doing it full time, the Sefer HaChinuch points out that addictions in general, being addicted to something, is inappropriate. He applies this as being Losa Suru Acharei Levavchem Acharei Einechem. People who are too gravitized towards something, which is, even if it's not necessarily usur, even if it's not necessarily inappropriate, but being too obsessed, too addicted to something is inherently something to refrain from. I happen to think that with fantasy sports and doing NCAA brackets, you know, it's only a few week thing. Like, who doesn't love that Thursday, Friday of like, you watch 6 games like in an hour? But either way, just to point out that there's a fine line. Most of us, we do this for fun. We do this on our free time. So I think there's a value to it. I think following sports and having, like, I think fantasy baseball keeps me involved in baseball. Otherwise, I wouldn't care. And fantasy football gives you a camaraderie with your friends. And there's a lot of benefits from it. But obviously, to know yourself, to know your boundaries, know your limits. I can tell you more stories about friends of mine that have lost a lot of money. But that's for a different time. All right. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Very good.